growing muscles. Early on the morning of the ninth day, sedation was terminated. By 10 a.m., Freda was breathing without a respirator. At 1 p.m., she opened her eyes. She was still securely strapped to the bed. Empty gauntlets hung flaccidly from the walls.
How are you feeling?
I hurt. I hurt everywhere.
That is entirely normal, I assure you. We're going to release the restraints now. You need to start moving your arms and legs.
Technicians slipped into gauntlets on both sides of the chamber. Their gloved hands unfastened the straps, which slithered off her. When she sat up, she nearly bumped her head on the chamber's low ceiling.
Please be careful. You have grown 4 inches. You are now 5 feet 11 inches tall. You have gained 63 pounds.
Right.
She looked down at herself. Even though she'd known, more or less, what to expect from computer morph projections, she recoiled.
Holy shit.
Her breasts were still there, in the same size and shape, but they looked smaller, flatter, because of the expansion of her chest and bone and muscle. The new muscle mass was smooth and quick, not corded or bulked up. Like her breasts, her hips had remained the same size, but they now looked narrow relative to the increased span of her shoulders.
I'm a goddamned East German swimmer.
She frantically ran her fingertips over her lips and chin to find no sprouting of coarse facial hair. Although her jaw seemed a little heavier, as did her cheekbones and brow, there was no other apparent external masculinization. She changed into a very tall, very athletic-looking female, the tallest, most athletic female the limitations of her existing genetics could produce. And that was just the tip of the iceberg. She flexed her right bicep, and despite a twinge of pain in her elbow, was momentarily transfixed by its unfamiliar bulge.
Based on the previous experiments, your lean muscle mass should continue to increase slightly for a few more days. The new neural connections are already complete, as is bone growth. You aren't going to get any taller. As you know, some experimental subjects post-transformation have displayed outbursts of extreme violence. We have only had combat simulations to work from, but it appears that spending long periods of time in a battle suit under stress aggravates the problem. If you notice any loss of emotional control, you must start injecting yourself with antipsychotic drugs from the battlesuit medkits at once.
What are the side effects?
Reduced reaction time and increased fatigue.
But that would completely defeat the purpose of the procedure.
I'm sorry, but that is impossible to predict. No one knows the long-term consequences of the genetic treatment you have been subjected to.
The slowly simmering anger that had always been a part of Freda was now paired with an entirely different level of agitation, almost tangible, like a hairy-legged insect buzzing, bouncing off the insides of her internal organs. Everything was taking too long.
Unseal the door.
The airlock remained shut.
The viral agent we have used is extremely infectious and prone to rapid mutation and genetic recombination with other potentially fatal life forms. Understandably, we are very concerned about its containment. We strongly recommend that you spend another 3 days in level 4 quarantine to make sure it is all passed out of your system.
Fuck that!
Moving in a blur, Freda grabbed one of the white coat's gloved wrists.
Delay of any kind is unacceptable.
I understand your impatience. Just do not rip the glove. You must not break the level 4 containment. If you relax for a moment, everything will be fine.
The fuck it will!
The other gauntlets rapidly emptied as biotech workers moved out of her reach.
Let me out of here now!
Please, listen to reason.
Reason!
My wrist! My wrist! The crazy bitch broke my wrist!
Crazy? Open the fucking door!
Ryan Cotter stepped over an exposed tree root, slick, dark, and as big as a human corpse sprawled across his path. The profusion of bare roots laced the winding trail and made the footing treacherous. The dim light didn't help matters. Though it was high noon, everything was cloaked in shadow, thanks to the dense canopy overhead and the seemingly endless groves of black bark trees. In all his travels, he had never seen this type of rad-mutated oak before. Its wood was like iron. Hand axes bounced off it, hardly making a dent. The bark and leaves were chemrain resistant, as were the parasitic strangler vines that spiraled up trunks and limbs to reach the sunlight. The forest's canopy had protected Ryan and his companions from the searing downpours they'd endured since their last Matt Trans jump several days earlier. The intense storm activity of the past 48 hours had forced them to take shelter in a cave. From its entrance's safety, they'd winced at sizzling nearby lightning strikes and watched as methane ice hail, as blue and big as robin's eggs, pounded the earth. In scattered heaps, the chem ice had steamed for hours before it finally melted away. If the local trees and vines had somehow adapted to survive the caustic rains, other types of foliage had not. There was no ground cover to speak of around the trunks, just slippery piles of fallen leaves that rustled underfoot. The passing storm front had left the air extremely hot and punishingly humid. It felt equatorial to Ryan. The weather was the only clue where he and the companions had materialized. The cloud cover and canopy had made it impossible for them to orient using the stars. As he rounded a tight bend, he saw the group's point man frozen like a bird dog 50 feet ahead. Ryan swung to hip height the scoped Steyr SSG-70 sniper rifle he carried. Jack Lauren, his pale skin and lank white hair almost luminous in the forest's half-light, held up a hand, indicating caution. Jack was a man of few words. Fiercely loyal, without an ounce of guile or deceit, he was a true Deathlands wild child. Jack's weapon, a battle-scarred 357 Magnum Colt Python, remained in its holster. Whatever he'd found, there was no immediate danger.
Cookfire. There.
Ryan caught the faintest smell of wood smoke filtering up the winding trail through the forest. It was the first sign of another human presence since the Matrans jump.
Smells fucking delicious.
For 3 days, the companions had been on starvation rations of muddy rattlesnake jerky and tepid water. The forest's lack of undergrowth meant there was no ground-dwelling game for them to hunt. During the day, they'd caught a few glimpses of little creatures darting about high in the branches, but the dense forest made shooting at them a waste of ammo. And at night it was so black, they couldn't see their own feet. A tall, skinny man, dressed in a dusty frock coat and tall boots, moved up the trail and closed ranks with Ryan and Jack. Leaning on his silver-handled walking stick, Doc Tanner joined them.
Dear friends, it would seem that Providence has seen fit to smile upon us once more. Somewhere below, the groaning board is piled high. Broiled flesh of some sort, I would venture.
Though Dr. Theophilus Algernon Tanner appeared to be a well-preserved 60, chronologically he was 4 times that old. The Harvard and Oxford-educated man was the first human time traveler, albeit an unwilling one. He'd been ripped from his family in 1896 and drawn 100 years into the future by the Operation Kronos Whitecoats. The 20th century scientists quickly tired of Tanner's ingratitude, truculence, and general unpleasantness. Shortly before Skydark, to rid themselves of the troublemaker, they had hurled him forward in time. By doing so, they had inadvertently saved him from the new cost that destroyed their entire civilization. Though Doc sometimes rambled and broke into tears for no apparent reason, a consequence of his life's overload of trauma and tragedy, this day he was as sharp as the steel blade hidden in his ebony stick. A stocky black woman, dressed in baggy camo BDU pants and a sleeveless gray t-shirt, stepped up behind Tanner. Her hair hung down in beaded plaits.
Smells like somebody's had themselves a hearty breakfast.
Dr. Mildred Wyeth had also time-traveled. After a life-threatening reaction to anesthetic, she'd been cryogenically preserved just prior to the all-out U.S.-Russian nuclear exchange on January 20, 2001. She'd slept for a century until revived by Ryan and the companions. Her weapon of choice was a Czech ZKR-551 target pistol, the same gun she'd used to win a silver medal in the last-ever Olympic Games.
Whatever it is, it's making my mouth water.
Dear Dean, the human nose is by no means an infallible instrument. What we Homo sapiens take for sweet succulence might very well be the effluvium of some wayfarer not unlike ourselves. Someone whose grim misfortune was to be caught out in last night's chain lightning. That hill-struck sir or madam could be down there somewhere, quietly smoldering.
Gross. Or it could be a trap.
Because of the sweltering heat, Christy Roth, Ryan's lover and soulmate, had taken off her long fur coat